Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The recent national security leaks allegedly committed by Edward Snowden has focused attention away from the ongoing saga of WikiLeaker Bradley Manning, a U.S. Army private intelligence analyst whose court-martial trial continues into its third week this week. Manning allegedly gave 750,000 classified documents to WikiLeaks. And today, people continue to debate whether Manning's actions make him a traitor or a hero. In fact, my guest today says the nature of secrecy in our various national security institutions bring that whole question of what needs to be secret into play. Writer, journalist, and Tulsa native Denver Nix is my guest today. Nix was the first journalist to give us a nuanced look into the life and motivations of Bradley Manning, first in a This Land feature piece, and then the book Private, Bradley Manning, WikiLeaks, and the Biggest Exposure of Official Secrets in American History. Denver Nix will be in town for a question and answer session following the opening of the new film by documentary filmmaker Alex Gibney, We Steal Secrets, The Story of WikiLeaks. That's going on Friday at the Circle Cinema. And Denver Nix joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Denver Nix, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Rich. It's great to be with you here.
As Bradley Manning's court-martial trial is now entering its third week, I was struck by something you wrote as the trial began. You said the real question is not whether Manning is a traitor or a hero. It's about the nature of what constitutes a government secret in our post-9/11 mindset. And given the recent revelations of Edward Snowden and the NSA leaks, this seems to be further called into question. You know, what is the nature of a government secret? What is truly secret? And what shouldn't be?
That's right. I mean, the biggest question I think that this case and others like it really brings up is the context in which it happened. We have undergone a pretty dramatic shift in this country in the last 10 years since 9/11 in terms of what we consider to be secret and how we operate with classified information, how we keep information classified, and how we share classified information. At the same time that the federal government, like everybody else, has gotten more and more involved in the internet and in the ethos of sharing information and openness in that sense, they've also tried to clamp down more than ever before on information nominally deemed to be, state secrets. I think we classify now, in the years since 9/11, we classify something like three times as many documents as we did before. So it's sort of these two contravening forces of secrecy and openness that collide in the Bradley Manning case, and I think we're seeing that in the Snowden case now. There's a bigger context here about what has happened to our country, and questions about heroism or treason aside, what this means for American democracy.
Have you been surprised at how so many people view what Bradley Manning did as differently than how the government has reacted? It seems like leaks have always been a part of American government, and it's just in the last 10 to 15 years where that's really been criminalized again.
That's right, to an extent. I mean, Daniel Ellsberg was prosecuted for leaking the Pentagon Papers. He didn't ultimately stay inside of prison, but they certainly tried to throw the book at him and kind of screwed that up on a technicality. And it's often forgotten that, whereas Ellsberg today is sort of lauded as a hero, he was pretty vilified.
Yes.
When he first leaked those documents, and for several years thereafter. I can't say I'm surprised at how people have reacted to the leaks. I mean, Washington, D.C. runs on leaks. Most of them never make the news because, as Christopher Hitchens, rest his soul, once said, something like, every piece of valuable information in Washington, D.C. is classified to one degree or another. Anytime a reporter speaks to a congressional staffer and he gives him some little tidbit, little secret, that information is, classified and protected. It's just usually not prosecuted. It's understood that that's how the system works. We hear about it in cases like Snowden and Bradley Manning because of the scale of the leaks and because of the context in which they're, Snowden was a contractor for the NSA and Bradley Manning, of course, an Army intelligence analyst. So they're leaking secrets in the context of national security on a scale that sort of had never been seen before. That's what makes them different, really. And not even until the Obama administration have we seen a crackdown on leaks like we're seeing today. Under the Bush administration, as much as a lot of Democrats like to, you know, bring up the secrecy of the Bush administration and paint that administration as sort of quasi-totalitarian or what have you. The Obama administration is currently undertaking more prosecutions for leaks under the Espionage Act than all of the previous presidential administrations combined.
Is that a sense of politics, or do you think it's a sense of the government trying to get control of its own information flow and trying to control information flow?
Well, that is a great question, and the million-dollar question is sort of why? What's causing this? I think it's all of the above. I mean, in part, I think the Obama administration has shown itself to be pretty hostile to the media, to criticism from the media. They got really used to a press that was probably a little bit too cozy with candidate Obama. And they've been hostile to the sort of traditional rambunctiousness of the media with respect to the administration. On the other hand, they're also dealing with an unprecedented situation in which we have tremendous amount of information kept secret, something like, for example, the drone program only recently acknowledged, and it's a central aspect of our foreign policy by, you know, a number of definitions of war that I consider to be legitimate. We are engaged in wars and armed conflict in a whole bunch of countries around the world that nobody thinks we're involved in a war in, simply because the drone program, targeted assassination program, have been kept secret for so long, and we don't really have a public debate about whether or not we should be, you know, assassinating people, engage bombing other countries, for instance.
And this gets into that whole question of secrecy, because when the drone program was the worst kept secret for a long time. I mean,
yeah,
people knew
right.
We had drones, and we knew that we were doing bombing runs via drone, even as the government continued to deny its existence. I think when you see like the latest leaks, there's been outrage in certain quarters. But I think most American people go, duh, yeah, of course they're doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really kind of, it becomes laughable at a point. And that's the biggest problem with secrecy. One of the biggest problems with secrecy is that it sort of undermines itself. You have a situation in which you classify too many documents, too much information, then the effect of that is to dilute the well of secrets. So information that is, you know, highly classified for a good reason that nobody should find out is suddenly kept in the same big pool as information that isn't even really secret. Bradley Manning's leak is a good example of this. A lot of what he leaked wasn't even classified. That video, for instance, there's a video called it's an Apache helicopter video that is called Collateral Murder now, that sort of made Bradley Manning famous and WikiLeaks famous when it was first released. That video wasn't even classified. And yet, you know, he leaked it and it created this big stir. There's a lot of information out there that is not a secret that's classified. In fact, you see it in Bradley Manning's court-martial right now. The attorneys are not even allowed to discuss the details of the documents that Bradley Manning leaked, because all of those documents are legally classified, despite the fact that you can get on your computer right now and download any one of them. And yet the attorneys, you know, every time they bring up the documents, all of the reporters have to leave the room, and they cut off a live feed to a media center, so they can have a discussion about documents that the journalists can then get on their iPhones and download at any moment they want to. It becomes pretty absurd and is, you know, indicative of what has become a pretty dysfunctional classification system in the United States.
And in fact, you write that of the 3/4 of a million documents that Manning leaked, none were top secret, were they?
That's right. None of them were classified top secret.
11,000 were classified secret.
Right. And then others were classified at sort of lower levels of classification, and some of them were not even classified.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you got involved with Bradley Manning and telling his story in your book, Private, Bradley Manning, WikiLeaks, and the Biggest Exposure of Official Secrets in American History. Although I have to point out that with Edward Snowden's revelations, maybe that's not the biggest exposure anymore. But how did you first get involved with Bradley Manning?
Yeah, and thank you for reading the full title of the book on air. I appreciate it. Most radio interviewers won't go there. I know it's a mouthful, so thank you.
Yeah.
Bradley Manning, as many people may know, is from Oklahoma. I am from Oklahoma, from Tulsa. I grew up in Tulsa, and after Bradley Manning was arrested, I wrote a profile of Bradley for a magazine. That profile sort of gained quite a bit of attention. It was kind of the first in-depth look into who Bradley Manning was. And at that time, certainly, he had perpetrated the biggest leak of state secrets in the history of the United States and probably the world. Whether Edward Snowden's leak will prove to be bigger, we still will have to see. But the profile, you know, gained quite a bit of attention, and that gave me the opportunity to write a book on the project, and I just became fascinated by both questions of this enormous news event. I mean, as a journalist, I'm interested in an event that has news value sort of by my very nature. But as I kind of started to dig into Bradley Manning's life, spent some time in the town of Crescent, where he grew up, just north of Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. I just became really fascinated by Bradley Manning, the person. He certainly didn't fit the profile that had been portrayed in the media, and was not a kind of angry, malicious leaker or even a sort of crazed hacktivist like he'd been portrayed, but a much more nuanced, thoughtful person and with a fascinating life story. I became fascinated by understanding why he did what he did, and I wrote a book about it.
A genuinely conflicted soul, gender identity, his sexual orientation. Generally, when we think of military analysts who are handling sensitive documents, we think of the military basically not entrusting a person with those issues in that sort of position. And I think this has been one of the issues that have come out of Bradley Manning's situation, is that here is a person who is in genuine emotional distress, and it's fairly readily apparent to his superiors. And yet, because he was an intelligence analyst and he was very much in demand, he was sent to the Middle East and
That's
in
right.
a position of seeing lots of classified documents.
That's right. I mean, one of the things that his story reveals or reminds us of is what happened in the Iraq War, and how by the time Bradley Manning got there, the army was stretched incredibly thin. They had already lowered enlistment standards to, you know, allow more people in because they were having trouble filling the ranks, getting the numbers of people on the ground they needed in Iraq. And Bradley Manning, though he had displayed some pretty troubling signs before ever being deployed, signs that one of his superior officers even said to her superior officer should result in him not being deployed with his unit. He went anyway. He was sent anyway. And, you know, that's a tragedy unto itself. I hasten to add that despite that and the fact that there are, you know, reasons to wonder if Bradley Manning should not have had the security clearance he did, he was very good at certain aspects of his job. And that, I think, is something that is overlooked and misunderstood. But he was, Bradley Manning is an incredibly bright person and good with computers, but more than that, just very bright, analytical mind. A news junkie, and was really good at connecting the dots, which is kind of what he was supposed to do as an intel analyst. So there's reason that he was sent there, and he wasn't altogether unqualified to do the work that he did.
Explain exactly what his job was, because I think this has been an issue. It's like, how would a private, you know, I think people think of their own military service and say, how would a private have access to all of this? And while he was a low-ranking enlisted man, he had very specialized skills.
That's right. His job as a low-level intelligence analyst was basically to take in information from what they call SIGACs, Significant Activity Reports. These are field reports filed by Army personnel kind of out on patrol, and put all that information about where bombs are going off in Baghdad into various databases and kind of crunch the numbers in different ways and try to see patterns in where bombings are happening or how bombs are made or who's communicating with who in insurgent networks and that sort of thing. And the fact that Bradley Manning, as you say, had this extraordinary access to state secrets, things like diplomatic cables and, you know, from the embassy in Kyrgyzstan or what have you, that don't seem at all relevant to the work of an intel analyst in Iraq. That's indicative of what we were talking about before and this extraordinary change we have seen in the last 10 years as the government has sort of tried to leverage the tools of the internet to become more efficient. Bradley Manning joined the Army 1 year after the U.S. government launched something called the Net-Centric Diplomacy Initiative, which was the initiative whereby all of the embassy cables sent between the U.S. diplomatic outposts around the world would be made available on the secret internet network that Army intel analysts use. So suddenly, instead of just having field reports from area around his base, Bradley Manning has access to all of the field reports ever sent in the Iraq War. He also has access to the field reports from Afghanistan. He also suddenly has access to all these diplomatic cables sent for, you know, decades and decades in the past from outposts around the world. That's never happened before. And the real reason that this is the biggest leak of all time is that all he had to do was burn that information to a CD and then put it on a thumb drive. You know, he didn't. Daniel Ellsberg had to spend days in a hotel room running off copies of these documents that he lifted from the Rand Corporation. Bradley Manning just had to burn them onto a CD labeled Lady Gaga.
That is true. And out of those leaks, now I know you went into a lot of detail in determining what motivated him. But as far as in your book, you write that, you know, he was a believer in transparency in government, and there should not be secrets. It was an altruistic motive for everything we can discern.
Yeah. At this point, there's no doubt that Bradley Manning was motivated by a sense of altruism, that the same motivation that led him to join the Army, which was, you know, in part because he believes in the United States as a force for good in the world and felt like he wanted to do his part and make a patriotic contribution. That same motivation is what motivated him to leak documents. People can disagree with him about that, and many people do, but there's really no controversy about that. And anyone who says there is, as far as I'm concerned, is just being disingenuous. There's never been any evidence to suggest that he had a malicious intent.
Once he was exposed by a computer hacker and Adrian Lamo, he's immediately detained. And of course, the story of his detention has been as big a story as what he leaked. He's been in detention now for what, about 2 to 3 years? And the first couple of years, it sort of mirrored some of the worst stories we were hearing from Guantanamo.
Yeah, that was a real shame. I mean, and the Department of Defense itself has basically admitted that the way he was detained was totally inappropriate and illegal. He's actually been given credit for some of that time served to be applied to whatever his eventual sentence is. But yeah, the circumstances of his detention were pretty unfortunate. He was basically kept in what is tantamount to solitary confinement for somewhere on the order of 9 months, and kind of became the Alice in Wonderland nightmare, where the weirder he acted while he was under solitary confinement, the worse the solitary confinement became.
It was all in the guise of anti-suicide. He was on a suicide watch or harm to self watch.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That was ostensibly, he was right, being protected from himself. That doesn't seem to have been the motivation behind that level of incarceration for very long, though.
Now, right now, he is being court-martialed, and the trial is ongoing. And at this point, it's for aiding and abetting the enemy. I mean, he's pled guilty to a number of charges about, I think, the leaks themselves, hasn't he? And he's received about a 16-year sentence for that. Now he's under court-martial for aiding and abetting the enemy. And I assume you've been following the trial. Is there any signs that he actually did aid and abet the enemy? The biggest piece of evidence I've heard is we've had a video of a combatant figure who used some details of the leak in his video.
Right. There was a guy, there was an Islamist combatant who mentioned some of the leaks in one video he released. A Navy SEAL has testified that he found evidence of some of the information Bradley Manning leaked at the compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan, where Osama bin Laden was killed. And that is the evidence, it seems for right now, that the government is leaning on to show that Bradley Manning aided the enemy. Now, the problem with that is that if by leaking documents to a news organization, you're aiding the enemy, if the enemy then, you know, reads the news, it creates really serious problems for our traditions of free speech and free press in the United States. Like we talked about earlier, almost every information of value in Washington is classified to one degree or another. A lot of the information that gets leaked, for example, about the bin Laden raid itself, was classified. That information was leaked probably by somebody in the administration because it makes the administration look good, and they decided to release that information sort of for their own political purposes. Now, the next Osama bin Laden would presumably take the time to read those reports about how that raid went and maybe make plans for how he would hide himself if under assault from the U.S. military. Did that leak then aid and abet the enemy? I mean, you see what I mean.
Yes.
If talking to a reporter means treason, then we've got much bigger problems on our hands.
My guest today is Denver Nix, a freelance journalist and the author of Private, Bradley Manning, WikiLeaks, and the Biggest Exposure of Official Secrets in American History. He wrote some of the first articles about Bradley Manning, which gives a very nuanced picture of this character, deeply conflicted, leaked three-quarters of a million documents, which the government has alleged has caused the government harm and the nation harm. There are many defenders that defend him as on free speech rights. And one of the unintended consequences of this leak has been what most observers would say has been a good thing in the Middle East, which has been the Arab Spring, new governments in Egypt and Tunisia, democracy protests in some of our erstwhile allies, which, of course, our government hasn't been so supportive of. But those leaks had some unintentional good consequences on the part of democratizing a pretty autocratic part of the world.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that seems to be the case. There are a lot of people. Much has been made about whether the leaks spurred on or caused the Arab Spring. And I think Julian Assange, the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, for instance, tends to overstate what an effect those leaks had. I mean, there was a lot of context, a long history of dissident movements that were building towards something like the Arab Spring. And it's important to note that. On the other hand, they did certainly at least seem to add to the sense of democratic upheaval in the world at the time the Arab Spring took place, and certainly seemed to me anyway, to have made a contribution to the Arab Spring, which led directly to the Occupy movement in the United States. So really long-ranging, reverberating effects. And then there have been other revelations from these leaks that haven't gotten quite as much news, although, to my mind, they're very revelatory and important.
For example?
For one thing, a number of diplomats lost their jobs, so there have been some pretty negative impacts from the leaks. Diplomats reassigned, really embarrassing situations for the United States, having secrets revealed and off-the-cuff observations of foreign leaders revealed to the media. On the other hand, the Department of Defense has been caught sort of outright lying. For instance, the DOD always said they didn't keep civilian body counts in Iraq, that they didn't know how many civilians had died. But the WikiLeaks revelations revealed that the DOD does do civilian body counts. They knew how many civilians had been killed in Iraq, and it was at least 15,000 civilian deaths higher than the previous estimates. And then there are, of course, revelations about detainees in Iraq being turned over to Iraqi authorities who we knew were using torture in their interrogations. So that's a violation of international conventions against torture. So really troubling revelations that I don't think we've fully dealt with in this country yet. Hopefully we will in coming years.
Have you been following the trial closely, Denver? It's ongoing here in its third week?
Yes, I'm not covering the trial myself. I follow it in the news.
Yeah, what do you expect the outcome? Do you expect him to be found guilty? Just your own personal sense.
Well, Bradley Manning has, like you said, he has admitted to being the source of these leaks. So he will be found guilty almost certainly, at the very least, of perpetrating the leaks, of like move of what they call moving secure information to a non-secure computer, mm-hmm. things like that. Whether he's found guilty of violations of the Espionage Act, to me, is a really open question. I would be surprised if he was found guilty of all of the Espionage Act violations he's facing. And I just can't believe that he would be found guilty of aiding the enemy. That, to me, opens up such a terrifying can of worms as a journalist. I don't know why the government would want to bring that, would want to create that precedent or bring that much outrage on the part of the media. And I don't think I would be the only journalist that would be troubled by that result.
One last question, and that has to do with, you know, you've heard the old adage about the pendulum of history swings both ways. It's sort of the same thing of the way we govern ourselves. And certainly the pendulum has swung towards more security, more secrets. Do you think in the wake of Bradley Manning, Edward Snowden, and all the other leaks that we've been hearing about, from the leaks of the drone program to, you know, and which that search is ongoing for who leaked that information, that maybe the pendulum is swinging back the other way?
Yes, I think so. In a very uncomfortable, awkward way, it's not been a smooth transition, and one would wish that elements in the government would take steps to make the transition a little smoother. But I do think that the pendulum is swinging back the other way, and that as we become more self-assured, as the United States kind of takes time off from being world police, being at war in Afghanistan and Iraq, now that those conflicts are winding down, now that we're getting over a decade out from 9/11, and we can start to take a breath and think about our democracy here at home, and what kind of country we want to live in. I really think that we're going to see the pendulum start to swing back a little bit, and hopefully toward a bit more of a democratic equilibrium, if you will.
All right. The name of the book is Private: Bradley Manning, WikiLeaks, and the Biggest Exposure of Official Secrets in American History. Bradley Manning's court-martial trial is now in its third week. Denver Nix, we appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
Denver Nix is a freelance journalist and author of Private: Bradley Manning, WikiLeaks, and the Biggest Exposure of Official Secrets in American History. He'll be participating in a question and answer session at the Circle Cinema Friday night following the opening of We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks by documentary filmmaker Alex Gibney. For more information, visit circlecinema.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.